You are listening to Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan Becker here. This is my first podcast of the season, even though we're like 28 games in, so I'm ashamed. Here to shame me even more, of course, as always, Nate Parham. Joined for the first time, we are excited to have Golden State of Mind contributor, writer, does a lot of stuff, moderating, longtime community member, Dubby Dub Dubs. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. It's an honor to be here.
We recorded one take with Dubby's name, and it's now been redacted. All right, so we've got a game coming up tomorrow. It's the Dallas Mavericks. Nate already decided that he didn't want to talk about Harrison Barnes, but I think we're going to do that anyway, because what would a Golden State of Mind cast be without a little bit of shade toward Harrison Barnes? did the preview, wrote up the preview today for that game.
Hot off the presses.
Yeah. So what are you seeing there for the Mavericks taking on this kind of, you know, limping team of the Warriors right now?
I didn't realize they were in last place, man. They are worse than the Kings. They're worse than the Suns. Even the Memphis Grizzlies, who are total melting down, have a better record than the Dallas Mavericks right now. They're without their point guard, though, and they don't have their best rookie. And Dirk is like 50 years old. So, I mean, I get it.
They've seemed like the kind of team that as Dirk has aged, and, you know, we all know they've never really been able to put together that roster to support him since that championship run. And like every year they either swing for the fences and miss, and then like pick up some guys to kind of fill in the gaps. And it's kind of felt like this last couple of years now with Dirk is like, you know, 55 years old. It's finally gotten to that point where, you know, like they have what they have, but they should probably tank instead of competing. And maybe that's what we're seeing this year.
Yeah. I think, I mean, just judging from what their fan base is saying, I think they're in full tank mode at this point. But you know, it's kind of hard to see the forest for the trees when you're in it, right? Because when we were tanking to get Barnes, I mean, we just sucked, dude. I don't know how we're trying. Like, we had nothing, dude. We had like D League call ups. Like, remember the D League All Stars? It was like an entire starting five of like maybe Draymond, maybe Steph was in there, but like
no, Draymond was D-League came in with Barnes. It was bad. It was the second half of the season after the Monte trade was pretty rugged.
Cartier, Martin.
That was a fun one. I remember that game where there was like six active players or whatever. And
So they're going through the same thing. And, you know, I mean, I know Nate is sick of hearing about it, but Harrison Barnes is just – he's adequate. But the problem is he can't deliver on demand.
Correct.
Adequate for what, really? I'd like a little bit of clarification.
I mean, he's leading their team in points and rebounds, and he's shooting at a reasonable – efficiency. It's kind of like the David Lee scenario, though, where it's like, if you could separate how much money he made versus his performance, there'd be no complaints. It's just like, in light of being a max contract player.
Correct. And he can't be like, you know, with all the guys out. I mean, he's like your high usage guy. So it's
a high usage guy for sure.
Yeah. I mean, so that's never going to be effective. You know, it's kind of like an I told you so. Not that I would ever say I told you so about Harrison Barnes, because I'm not that petty. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it was pretty clear when he was on the Warriors that was probably his optimal role. Like being like a fourth guy on the court, maybe fifth guy even in some lineups, where he's doing his thing on defense and he's getting catch and shoot opportunities on offense and not asked to do very much. Like the idea that he was ever going to be good in this role was absurd to me. So, you know,
we definitely talked about that when like the idea of, you know, could he be the third best player on a good team? And then we got around to, well, like, what would he be on a bad team? Like, could he be the first best player on a bad team? And he can't do that, you know, like, it's I guess anybody could, but
well, I mean, that might be where he is now, though, right?
It's basically, yeah, he's
would you take old man Dirk, 39 years old for the record, over Harrison Barnes right now?
No, I wouldn't.
Right, Barnes the best player. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe Dennis Smith. Like, I mean, he might be the best player on that team,
which is sad.
Well, yeah,
Dennis Smith has a ton of potential too. And yeah, what's your take on Nerlens Noel?
Who, me? I like him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
sloppy, but
yeah. I mean, they have like potential guys who could maybe grow, but I mean they're in a bad spot right now. You're right, they're probably, I mean they don't, it's like Ivan said, they're just bad. I don't know if they're tanking because they're not like they don't have to deliberately tank right now. They're just not a well-composed team. So
Yeah, and I think just as fans, you sort of embrace that because it's like, what else are you going to root for?
right, exactly. So you might as
Down to
well tank.
draft picks. I mean, it's not like they're chasing it on purpose.
Right. But it is kind of like you said in the beginning, it's kind of stunning they're behind Phoenix.
Yeah,
Phoenix
I
is,
didn't realize.
yeah, they're in a bad spot.
So I've been looking at
But
their roster because I haven't paid attention to the Mavericks at all this year.
yeah.
I'm gonna go out and go ahead and say that Wes Matthews is a better player than Harrison Barnes right now.
Right
Am I
now? Yeah,
crazy?
probably. No.
Okay.
But
There we go.
that's because I might be a little biased
He's
on
the
that,
second best
so.
player on a bad team. There we go.
God, that's a low bar.
Nerlens Noel is really frustrating to me because I think that he should, it's one of those situations where you know he's only not getting minutes because of a personality clash or just a not fitting into that system situation. I mean, he should be fine. He does a lot of what they need, and he just can't really get the minutes. And I know that there's been well documented issues between him and Carlisle and really coaches in the past, and kind of
But
a
Carlisle also had issue with Rondo.
yep. Well, and Nerlens and Rondo might be kind of similar personality types, right? Like it's starting to feel like that a little bit. Where there's a little bit of inflated egos happening, overestimating the roles, perhaps. And Carlisle's not really the kind of guy that you can do that with, right? He's such a good coach, but he's not really going to put up with a lot.
Yeah, and you get the sports sort of correlation curve where the better you are, the more crap you're allowed to give the team.
Right.
Think if you're a sort of marginal Nerlens Noel sort of player, you're not getting any benefit here. They're not going to be like, well, I know he's a jerk, but let's be sure and get him some. He doesn't get that pull from his potential.
Agreed.
Right.
Hey, listen, we're like 8 minutes into this podcast and we're still talking about the Dallas Mavericks, so I would
Okay, this is why I didn't get sick of
love
it. Okay.
to move on. Oh, we can still talk about that matchup, but I don't want to deep dive into this roster anymore because it's really sad. They have a guy named Antonius Cleveland though, which is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
So I mean the Warriors themselves, like we're probably going into tomorrow night without Steph, definitely without Steph, maybe without Draymond as well.
It sounds like it.
And Zaza, I didn't catch his status. Is he game or is he
Also doubtful.
on the shelf? Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting little stretch here for the Warriors because in the last several years, like I can't really piece it together when we've seen this many injuries at once. And it's always been kind of like, well, this might happen, and this is one of the reasons why the Warriors have such depth is because they're protecting from this kind of scenario where they're not going to lose a ton of games, but it is interesting. I mean,
Yeah,
Steph.
I mean, go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm
go
sorry.
ahead.
I was just gonna say if Zaza and Draymond don't play, that's three of our starters. Like I can't remember that ever happening ever.
Yeah, it has been a long time, not in the championship era, as far as I can remember. And last year we did have the prolonged stretch without Kevin Durant, but that's such a different story because of how the Warriors were already composed without him, and it allowed Steph to kind of do Steph things again, and so it's a very different look right now, and you see guys like Iguodala starting to play a lot more minutes again. And which hadn't really been the case, and he's starting to show some signs, although making some mistakes in that last game. What are we looking at with? I mean, obviously, going up against the Mavericks, it's not something that like we've got to like really start worrying about and looking at matchups and all that stuff. But how have the Warriors looked to you guys without their two horses?
Well, I think last game, it's funny you said, the reason they put together the depth is to protect against this. But I think for a lot of people, this is an opportunity to kind of like explore the depth. Like, I don't think a lot of people thought this was a deep team coming into the season, or same with last season too. I think people the Warriors were derided for their depth, derided for not having defense or rim protectors, not having rebounders. And I think, it gets, when you're beating teams with, beating teams on the road with these injuries, especially. It becomes like, okay, so you have to take this team's roster seriously now. And I don't think that was a problem for Warriors fans. I think it was really outside of the Warriors fan base of people thinking this team was thin or super top heavy. But David West has been, I mean, that guy's, I mean, this is supposedly his last season, but I mean, it's like he can still like dig into the well and find the energy when he needs to. And I think he's going to be missed when he leaves. Just his presence on the bench has been huge, and he always seems to be a steadying presence. But I think just coming through that dunk he had the other night against Portland was, flashback to his youth or something. But I think for those of us that were have been saying this team is deep to begin with, these games have kind of been just kind of reinforcing that what we already knew about them. I think Jordan Bell has had opportunities now. We're seeing him grow. Jim Barnett has been on this thing with about Jordan Bell, like, he doesn't shoot very often, and he shot a little short jumper the other night, one of the last two games. So I think he's getting more minutes in there and able to grow a little bit. I think it's fun. Well, I think it's been fun to see some of these guys get some burn and improve themselves in different situations than most people are giving them credit for.
Yeah, they definitely coming into this season, there was some consensus that the depth was a little heavier than last year, getting Caspi and Nick Young, which has been fun for so far this season. Frustrating. It's like it's hard to be too frustrated at Nick Young because you know what you're gonna get, but like, does that guy know half the plays that they're running? Like, I really don't. It does. He's constantly in the wrong place, except when he's running to the corner for an open three and he's hitting threes. I mean, he's contributing. He's playing better defense recently, but like, it's just like he constantly is running the same route as another guy, and you're like, no, what are you doing?
I mean, it's pretty clear he's off after his
Players
own
do.
points, you know? I mean, it's what it is. That's what you expect from Nick Young.
Yeah, he's probably looking at this Steph injury going, yes, it's my
Yeah,
time.
exactly.
Well, now he's out with a concussion, right?
All right.
Yeah, he's out with a concussion for,
From your boy
foreseeable
Bell.
future. Concussions are hard, so, speedy recovery, hopefully, but yeah. I think to your point, I mean, I guess we can get this to this a little bit later, but I'm trying to figure out if he's meeting, exceeding, or failing to meet expectations so far. And I think he's about meeting my expectations, like exactly kind of what I expected from him.
His swagginess.
His swagginess, but the his production level, and just that, you had to figure that Nick Young was a guy who he just hadn't played in a system, in a structured system, in a championship system, or anything close to it before. And so, like, I figured we'd have, like, the problems Ivan's talking about, just like clearly not being in the right place or just clearly hunting for threes. Like, that's kind of what I expected. And my thing was just like, I just hope he gets enough so he's not like blatantly hurting the team. And I think it's hard to, because of the talent that's around him, it's hard to pin losses on Nick Young right now. You know what I mean? Like, he's never going to be in that position. So, it's kind of like it's hard to be frustrated, even though his play is sometimes frustrating. It's hard to stay frustrated at him because it's like, a lot of his minutes have been meaningless.
I'm looking at his numbers right now. Like he's over 70% for his 3-point attempt rate. So
Yeah, I
70%
mean that's, but
take
that's a
three.
good thing to me. Like, that means he's not doing other things. So,
Yeah, and he's reasonably efficient. He's for 36, he's putting up 19 points on like 6-16. I mean, that's better than JaVale and Zaza and Draymond's. Even better than Sean Livingston's true shooting.
It's hard to complain about that so far. With his departure because of the concussion, looking on the bright side of things, we'll certainly see a lot more of Nate's favorite player, future MVP, comeback player of the year. I don't know what are we giving? What kind of awards
Well,
are we giving this
at
year?
this point, we're hoping for comeback player of the year.
Patrick
It's been
McCaw.
rough going. It's been rough
Yeah,
going
he
this year.
actually. So that was actually the guy I was thinking of when I sent you guys my talking points. One of them was the most egregiously wrong preseason prediction, and mine is McCaw's minutes, man. I really thought that he'd be playing a lot more and playing a more significant role, and he's not.
Yeah, there was certainly a concern. I mean, that when they did sign Young and Caspi, it's like, whoa, shoot, like those are McCaw's minutes. Those are like I thought we had already preordained those minutes to him. Like what happened here? And we've seen that, right? Like Caspi is playing more than him. Nick Young's playing about the same. same amount of minutes. But you know, you kind of want McCaw to step into a bigger role and start becoming the successor to Andre Iguodala. Like last year, it really felt like he was under his wing, kind of playing a very similar style. Hasn't shown a lot of growth so far this year to my eye. Are you guys seeing anything different, or are we just kind of we're still in that same situation with McCaw?
He seems to be a little more comfortable as a guy who finishes a play with a 3-point shot.
Yeah, he's kind of like passive to me a lot. Like I last year, it just seemed like this was a rookie who felt, you know, I'm not gonna say fearless, but he felt like he wasn't intimidated by the moment. And this year, it looks like he's just really overthinking things. And I don't know if that's the next step in learning the offense or learning how to play with a team this insanely talented, which I think has to be taken into account. But yeah, I don't know. It's like he's always second guessing or just taking an extra second to think through his options instead of, you know, just attacking and playing naturally. So
do you think that's what happens when you know he might have his head on a swivel a little bit, looking at the bench and knowing that Swaggy and Omri Caspi are there?
It could be, but you know, at the same time, like he was the guy who was slated to be a backup point guard too,
right?
So like he had and Nick Young was certainly not going to do that, and Caspi wasn't. So you know, the role is pretty well, and you know, Kerr, you know, pretty much has designated him like it's almost the de facto third string point guard. I mean, he's kind of been given a clear opportunity to kind of step up, and I'm not sure, something's just not clicking this year.
Well, is that the right role for him? I mean, I look at McCaw, I see a guy that can handle in spots, but you know, he doesn't give me the confidence that I want out of my primary ball handler. And you know, the Warriors are such a kind of a different beast that they don't really need a primary ball handler typically. Right. If you have Draymond out there, and if you have other guys facilitating, Kevin Durant will bring it up a bunch. You know, you're always going to have Livingston. But I mean, we've seen Quinn Cook get a start. You know, we've seen Cook starting to get some minutes, and you know, it doesn't look bad. Like he looks like he can. He's at least comfortable with that particular role of being the lead guy on a team, even if he can't shoot or you know, do a lot of other things yet. But you know, it doesn't really feel like that's going to be McCaw's role on this team going forward.
You know, what's interesting about it though is that the franchise did something really similar with Kent Bazemore when he first came up. They tried to, you know, kind of slide him into that point guard spot, and it was very clear that Kent Bazemore was not a point guard. But you know, I think if you look at his career trajectory after leaving here, I think that experience really helped him, because I think it just helped him slow down, see the floor as a player, develop his ball handling skills, develop his playmaking. And he's, you know, he developed into a starting two on a playoff team in the East, granted, but you know, I think it really helped his development. I wonder, not that McCaw and Bazemore are exactly similar players, but in terms of being like a kind of developmental boost, I could totally see that for McCaw, like this being a good experience and moving on.
I could see them as being actually a pretty good comparison as far as player to player goes. I mean,
it's not far off.
They won't defend, you know, either one's comfortable from outside. But you know, I think the problem is that it's a very gray line between this guy can kind of dribble versus we want you to run the point for us.
Right.
Looking at a guy like, you know, Draymond Green versus Klay Thompson, I mean, I wouldn't say either one is specifically a super proficient dribbler. Like if you just dribble the ball around, neither one really looks that great. But for some reason, Draymond has just become much more comfortable in that role. You know, he's racking up a ton of assists. I mean, a ton of turnovers too, but there might be something in the personality that just like they're better able to surf that sort of like bleeding edge.
Yeah, it's the nebulous basketball IQ thing that some people like to stay away from talking about. But Draymond just sees things like a play ahead. It's amazing. Like we're in such an embarrassment of riches right now that it's like it's almost like we don't spend enough time talking about any of them, because if we try to talk about all of them, and Steph is amazing and he was here first, so I think he gets his credit. But like, you know, Klay, who I think you have plenty to say about, Klay has turned an amazing corner to me this year. Kevin Durant's amazing. Draymond's an amazing phenomenon as a basketball player. I just feel like we just kind of all accept it as the, you know, the norm now. But he's, you're right. The fact that you can expect him to be a playmaker And he does it without without outstanding ball handling skills. He does it with positioning. Just he's really efficient in his movements on offense. He just makes the first. He makes the right pass most times. It's pretty remarkable overall.
Before jumping back into Clay too, I just want to bring back that one point that you made, Nate, that drawing comparisons between McCaw and Bazemore and how the franchise is kind of developing those skills in these guys. And so it does make you wonder, like, you know, do they actually expect them to grow into point guards, or are they just trying to educate into them like a personality, right? Like a and the ball skills as well. But you know, it like give them some time playing point so that they think more about the game from a point guard's perspective, from a playmaker's perspective, where you have to see the court, you know, everybody on the court, and kind of understand and make quick reads and everything like that. Even if there's not an expectation that they're going to be point guard, that'll help develop them into players that will fit better into the Warrior system in the long haul, because this really is a system about making those reads, and everybody has to make those reads. Like they're going to need to be able to read the court and understand the play and understand how players are moving and defenses are reacting. And that's why, you know, long term, you hope something better for McCaw than like Nick Young, who's not going to develop those skills this late in his career. And certainly not, you know, in this offense so quickly. He's a professional. He's got some of that in there, but you know, what they're trying to do with these younger guys, even if they're not natural point guards, is, you know, maybe this is very intentional. Like, let's make sure that our wings know how to pass and know how to see the court.
I think part of it's intentional and part of it's just like practical. 'Cause I know, or I can speak more with Baze about Bazemore because I was hanging around Santa Cruz a little bit more at that time. But with Bazemore, the issue was that, you know, this is a talent we like. He really has, like, in our depth chart, there's like really no space for him at shooting guard or small forward, or the wing, which would be his more natural position. So if you want to get on the floor, we're going to send you to Santa Cruz. You're going to practice learning how to play a point guard, and that way you can maybe find a spot on this roster. So it was kind of like that, more like, if you want minutes, learn how to do this and we'll find minutes for you, because, you know, the team is flexible enough where, like, you're, and this is far more so now than when Bazemore was around, the team is flexible enough where we can put you there out there nominally as a point guard, and you can just pass the ball to someone else who will actually be the playmaker. So I think, I mean, I imagine it's a similar scenario with McCaw, where it's like, we like you as a talent. The two position is, you know, or the wing position right now especially is stacked. We're not going to find a whole lot of minutes for you there, but if you want to get on the court, learn how to do this thing, and you'll get, we can find more slots for you in the rotation. But then right now with McCaw, that's a bit more speculation on my part than it was with Bazemore, where it was pretty explicit that was his kind of developmental goal in Santa Cruz.
You don't think they're doing that with Nick Young at all?
But with Nick Young and JaVale McGee, probably not. No, although JaVale would probably love the opportunity to go to Santa
I
Cruz and
was
run
looking at
point.
the position estimate here on the team stats breakdown. It shows Nick Young was a point guard 15% of the time.
I must have missed those
Yeah,
moments.
there's
I don't
definitely
know.
15% seems high. I mean, certainly I've seen him do that during like garbage time, but I'm so
Yeah, it's
like,
the same. It's essentially the same percentage as small forward.
see, this is why people hate analytics, is
Yeah,
things
because I
like that
can't.
don't make any
My
sense.
eyeballs firmly disagree with
I
this.
can't even remember them allowing Nick Young to touch the ball like and dribble anywhere near the half court line. Like it just doesn't
Yeah, you catch
happen.
and shoot.
Yeah, exactly. That's the fear. He's gonna pull up from the circle.
Yeah, played a lot of passes too soon.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk
Yeah, my
about
nephew plays video games like that.
let's talk about Clay. W, you were talking about you know, his development this year, and specifically his development as a playmaker.
Yes.
And has that been, like, from what you've seen, has that been primarily without Steph, and, you know, with kind of, you know, a different look on the floor, or is this just kind of, you know, growth of by Clay as a player?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that it's something that Klay knows he needs to improve on. You know, you hear him talk about stuff like dunks and assists, where, you know, he's clearly looking at the box score and wanting to get better at these things. And then I think some of the other stuff is just like Nate was saying, is I think they're sort of putting him in a position where, not that they need to find him more minutes, But I think it's like, man, if you could just dribble and run sort of a point just a little bit, it would really help us out. Because Kerr runs those second units with Klay and KD, and then, a bunch of sort of less traditional scoring players. David West, Sean Livingston, McGee, Bell. And I think that it's sort of on Klay, one way or another, it's on Klay to try and make some plays happen.
Is the kind of missing the missing ingredient there, like whether he can get to the line or not? Because that's always been kind of
He can't. I mean, that's the thing. None of our guys get to the line. We suck at taking free throws.
But you know that's the kind of like if Klay could do that, if he could figure out a way to rather than curling off for that that elbow jumper every time. Whether he could maybe make do a pump fake or maybe just keep going and run into a guy. We talk about this every year. Like these guys just don't draw fouls, and you would think that it's something that coaches are drilling into them, and maybe it's just a skill that's actually really hard to learn. I'm fascinated by that, because they haven't really taken strides in that direction. I think that Steph is doing a little bit of a better of a job this year, but I mean, actually he's attempting 6.5 a game, more than KD. But regardless, like that would be, Klay Thompson's averaging 1.2 free throws attempted per game. And it's just not like he shoots 88%. He's got to get to the line more, especially if he's going to be dribbling the ball.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of incompatible with his general offense. I mean, he sort of is geared towards taking wide open shots much more than a player like, say, Steph or KD is. I think it's easier for Steph and KD to be like, okay, I'm gonna go get a foul, because that's sort of in their ballpark. Dribble the ball into a player and make something positive happen. Whereas most of the positive things that Klay does do not involve dribbling the ball into a person.
Right. Yeah. Although, the interesting thing is, I haven't gotten to mention the idea of like coming off a curl. I mean, I think in Klay's situation, it would be interesting to see what happened if he were to like it's were to do the thing where he's come off a curl, pump fake, and drive and see what happens. I mean, I just think it does it add another dimension? I mean,
Just
he
adds a
scores
Harrison
so
Barnes
efficient.
dimension.
What's that?
It adds a Harrison Barnes
Yeah.
dimension.
Yeah, or like a Darrell Wright pump fake.
Yeah, I mean, I just think
Sorry.
there's,
I don't know that there. I just don't know that it's necessary. It's kind of a weird thing. Like, yeah,
Right.
that's true. It's like it's
It
something he
would be
doesn't do,
nice.
but like, I don't know. Does he need to?
He doesn't really have a floater, so he would,
Yeah.
he's just better off taking that jumper, I guess, if he's not
Yeah.
going to be able to get to the line.
Right.
He's not a bad finisher on the rim, but that's not gonna be off the,
Right.
creating that play for himself.
Right. I think
Yeah.
Steph has done a better job this year, like a noticeably better job to me of seeking out that contact, and like whereas before I think he would use a variety of creative shots, now he's seeking out the contact and finishing with creativity after the contact, which is awesome. I just think Klay right now is still the mode where it's awesome. It's great to see him handling the ball better and willing more willing to drive, more willing to make plays. But I don't think he's at the point yet where he's seeking the contact the way Curry is,
Well, I
like
mean, maybe
Steph
this is
is.
a good point to transition to the Klay stats article that we just published.
Yeah.
Because, the sort of inspiration for the article that I had was, is he a better playmaker this year? Because talk about that a lot, and it's definitely a talking point in the broadcast and, media sources. And my eyeballs tell me that, yeah, maybe he's a little bit better, but, I wanted to look at the numbers, and they're just not really there. He's not a great playmaker even now.
So yeah,
So
I'm gonna say sucks to your stats, and
watch
just
the
say that.
game, Dubby.
Watch the game. Are you watching the film? Like I you. I mean, come on, we all see it, right?
We all do, but
We
you
all see it. I
a
mean,
certain percentage.
I like stats as much as the next guy, but this is one
He's
where
got
I think it's just like, go
J.J.
ahead.
Redick level of assist
Yeah,
percentage.
yeah.
I mean, it's hard to call that what a playmaker would look like statistically.
Truth, truth. I think. One thing I'd want to look into, I don't think you did this in your article, secondary assists. I'd be interested,
Yeah, I
or
did not
hockey
see that,
assists.
but
I'd be
yeah.
interested in that because the way that Warriors offense works, like if Klay is dribbling from the top of the key or the wing and he's beating his man, he's probably kicking to someone who's going to make an extra pass. So that's possible in my head. I just have all these images in my head where I was like, wow, I've never seen Klay do that before. And that means like beating his man, but also like making a pass off the dribble. It's just not something we saw from Klay. Like his first year, that was like out of the question. And even, before,
Playoffs.
Klay Epps were the thing. And, even after that, even after he kind of worked out the layup thing, it was like, if I mean, it was almost like a basketball camp drill with Klay. It's like if he wasn't coming to a solid jump stop, he was not going to make a pass. And I'm not like this year, I swear I've seen times where he's been making passes just off the dribble, one handed, just a little bit more creative with it. So maybe it's not amounting to more assists, but it's hard to ignore that something's changed there.
His rookie season, he's actually his second most or second highest assist percentage of his career, 14.2, and he's at 11.8 this year. I think that that's probably a little noisy because we definitely saw exactly what you're talking about. And to my eyes, what's not happening this year so much is just bonehead Klay, right? Like where he'll rather than pull up or do something, he'll pass it to the opposing team like very blatantly, and then he'll kind of do his like he throws his head back. Oh, what was I thinking? And he's making smarter plays, and that might definitely the hockey assist is what you might see out of that if he's not making the direct play for the next guy. They're probably higher percentage of that this year than we're accustomed to.
Yeah, and the numbers probably match up with Draymond picking up some of those because when Draymond came in, remember, he was hardly getting any assists. Draymond was averaging like I don't know, two or three. Like he really did not have a great assist number his first year, and now he's crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
Per 100 possessions, his rookie year was 2.5, and now he's at 10.8. So some
wow.
assists are coming from somewhere within the team.
Right. And that's the thing about the assist numbers too. Like assist percentage is like a percentage of the team. So it makes sense that it would go down from his Klay's rookie year to now because this team is just a much better passing team. So that could be part of
And then,
that explanation, but
just to explain the numbers some away some more too, last year was by far his worst year of his career in as far as assists goes. So it's probably a very dramatic improvement that just doesn't show very well on the sort of broader canvas of league-wide stats and like his career stats. But from last year to this year, yeah, he's definitely doing not just better, but doing better differently.
This also brings up the question of like how valuable the assist stat is, and like which kind of passing numbers you should be looking at. I mean, it's a tough one because I think, like we're saying, you can tell that Klay's become, if nothing else, a more confident ball handler, and I would say a more confident playmaker generally, even if we can't find the numbers right away to back that up. But assists are one way we look at that. But another way is, if you're able to beat your man, draw a second man, you're opening up the court for everyone else. And then a team like the Warriors, like we're saying, that just changes the way that the defense has to play when Klay is able to break down his defender. And I think especially with Steph out, there was one game I recall thinking, maybe it was the game against the Kings, where I recall thinking, Klay just wasn't up to this tonight. It was too much pressure and they were putting too much on him to create. But I think it's, I never when I was in Seattle when he when Klay was at Washington State, playing those games against Washington. And never did I imagine a player like this when I was watching the college Klay.
Oh,
So I'm
really?
like, oh no, not a ball handler. I mean, I was hoping for a spot up shooter, for a solid spot up shooter. The defense thing, the issue with defense is that was a defensive team there at Washington State, and so the issue was like you weren't going to be on the court if you couldn't defend at Washington State. He just wasn't getting defensive assignments because he was also the star scorer, and they were just putting him on, the second or third best guy. But offensively, like I just never imagined this guy being able to handle the ball nearly as well as he is this year, like never. And so, I'm kind of just like this is kind of it's just one another one of those cases where I think I haven't talked or we haven't talked about enough. Like it's kind of like found money to me. To use a Bob Fitzgerald term, which I'm obviously watching too many Warriors games. It's amazing to me to watch this. And like, it's just, when we talk about the embarrassment of riches, like the idea of Klay becoming a better ball handler within this team with that already has Draymond, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant is just ridiculous. Like, how do you guard this team?
When you look at the roster and you think of found money, like there, it's all over the place.
It's everywhere.
It's like a bank. And then then you start wondering, well, maybe it's not found money. It's just like really good management and coaching. You know, like nobody thought Draymond was going to be this person. Nobody thought that Clay was going to be able to, you know, handle and do so many things on offense. Nobody thought that that David West would play this well this late in his career. Nobody thought last year that JaVale McGee would be a difference maker. And like these things all happen. Jordan Bell. Like,
well, you know what's funny about Jordan Bell? Everyone kind of, we've gotten so many guys that have exceeded expectations that kind of, I think we overcompensated with Jordan Bell. Like, we're like, oh God, he's going to be great. Another second round steal. This is perfect.
And he is great. He's the best.
He is great. He's amazing.
Future starting center of the championship Golden State Warriors. Yeah, this is going to happen.
Exactly. I kind of believe that. I think that was a.
You got to take that job from Zaza. I told you I was going to defend Zaza tonight, Nate.
You did say that.
I don't think that that was ready yet. If he's our starting center next year.
Did he start a center last game?
Once?
Yeah, that's, once. I mean, did they win?
Yeah. Congratulations.
So we're undefeated with him at CJ Center.
I mean, yeah, but how are you, it's not Jim Barnett wearing JaVale McGee's gold chain? I mean, that's a one-to-one correlation there as well.
See, that's why I say just leave them stats alone.
In the gold bling era.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's Jordan Bell is – I think he's closer to a prime spot in this team's rotation than maybe we're giving credit for. Like I've been saying, like the beginning of next year being a starting center is not that far off to me.
I mean, he definitely like bounced Damian Jones.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, Damian Jones has been like forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, he's D-League, but
yeah,
he completely passed him.
Yeah.
Even though Jones is healthy now.
Yeah.
Well, and he's passed McGee too. I mean, and you know, even Looney is I don't know. I. Whenever Looney or McGee are in there now, I'm like, well, why isn't Jordan Bell just playing? Because
I
kind of want that too.
He's just more like when you see him on the court, he does things. He makes
these
difference making plays, and he doesn't make terrible mistakes. And just back to the foul money thing, it is funny about like we all had these suddenly super high expectations for him, and maybe that was in part because of what's happened with our second round picks, and kind of ignoring the late first rounders Looney and. Damian Jones.
You're part of the problem.
But it's funny too because as soon as he was drafted, everybody like fans of every other team were like, "Oh no, like he's gonna be like here we go again." And you're like, "What is like number 36 or 37 or whatever he was?" And that's the expectation that the Warriors have created. And I think he's living up to it. Like
he totally is living up to it.
His per 36 numbers are off the charts. Like he can pass. He's blocking all kinds of shots. He's getting steals. Like he's kind of the full package on defense and on offense. He's not really screwing up. And that's for a rookie. That's all that you can ask for, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, like you said, the fact that he's not making mistakes is amazing to me. That he's just like for a rookie getting. I mean, he's not getting a whole lot of minutes. I mean, he's getting a fair amount of minutes for a second round rookie to not be making mistakes is. Exceptional.
Right. And if you start looking at like as the minutes tighten up, you know, as we approach the playoffs or get into the playoffs, he seems like he's going to get those minutes. Like like you're saying, his per game minutes aren't super high right now, but who do you think that Kerr is going to go to over, between McGee, Bell and Looney when it comes down to it? Maybe I should rephrase that because Kerr went to Varejao and Festus when he shouldn't have. So never mind. That's a stupid question. Strength in numbers always.
Let's not open
up. Hopefully now the answer is going to be David West though, right? I mean,
well, absolutely.
David West is in the mix.
He's having a career year. I mean, maybe David West is our best backup center. I don't know.
But the thing is, he'll be, we expect him to be gone next year.
He's only
small chance that Zaza's gone as well, of course. Yeah. Not small chance. There's a chance that Zaza's gone. So, I mean, it's reasonable. I mean, we'll see what happens. I think before they let go of two vets, you'd have to see something out of Damian Jones. I mean, anything. Yeah, I guess at some point in the season, we'll see more of him. But it looks like he's... looks like he's just not going to – he's not a fit for here is what it looks like. Yeah. But we'll see.
Remains to be seen. We've got a long season remaining. I'm sure he'll get an opportunity at some point, February, March, April, to fill in some of those gap minutes, especially as West and the older guys get some more rest. But speaking of rest, I'm going to go to bed because I don't feel great. okay, and we've got a game tomorrow to watch. Thanks, guys, so much for joining me tonight. Is a good pod, and looking forward to Harrison Barnes dominating the Warriors tomorrow night, just to rub it into Nate's face.
Harrison Barnes revenge game.
That's what I'm anticipating. So. All right,
thanks guys. Thanks for doing this.
Talk to you next time on Golden State of Mindcast. Right.